couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today, we've got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about, including Golden Globe wins, Oscar nominations, Razzie nominations. You'll get my actually somewhat unique thoughts, not totally unique on the Razzies, but some of my unique thoughts on Golden Globe and Oscar nominations. There's also a couple new movies we got to talk about, actually four new movies, which is kind of a busy slate for January. We've got Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit, The Nut Job, Ride Along, and The Devil's Due. All of these I've seen. You'll get a chance to talk about those and see whether they're worth your time and money at the theater. There's also going to be a trailer park. We're going to talk about a couple trailers that have dropped. There's going to be some listener feedback, the world-famous DVD roundup, and some news. We're actually going to probably talk about the news later in the show because we've got such a packed first segment. So we're going to hit that. It's some news, and one of the topics is one of my favorite things to talk about, which is women's breasts. And not in the way that you think, though. So don't start calling me a sleazebag misogynistic jerk just yet. You got to wait a little bit. Wait till you hear what I have to say about naked women, and then you can judge me. All right, so let's move on. If you want to get a hold of me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can call me, leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. You can find Fat Guys on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com. Pretty easy to remember. You can go to facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies to connect with me personally. And if you want to find me on Twitter and yell at me and, you know, after you hear what I have to say later in the show and you want to, you know, call me a misogynistic pig, go ahead. You can tweet me at twitter.com/KevinCarr. So let's move into the news.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First off, the Golden Globes. The Golden Globes are often seen as an indicator of the Oscars. It's kind of one of the biggest ceremonies, the second biggest ceremony out there. I don't know why, because there's like 90 people that vote on this stuff, and they're all sort of stargazing journalists who really don't care about the movies, but care about meeting celebrities. But that's okay. We'll let that go. I had a chance to be on the Wall Street Journal's news show on the internet earlier this week, talking about my reaction, and I mean, it was a little bit underwhelming actually. If you actually watch the Golden Globes, there was no clear winner. There's not like that one, nine wins for whatever, American Hustle or whatever. American Hustle came out with a handful of wins, but 12 Years a Slave won nothing except Best Picture, which still kind of befuddles me. And, the American Hustle, that won a couple things. Matthew McConaughey, a big win for the Dallas Buyers Club cast with Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto both picking up awards for that. And Cate Blanchett won for Blue Jasmine in terms of best actress in a drama. She, I think she's the one who's going to win the Oscar. Just kind of go with me on that one. But, you know, generally there really wasn't a whole lot of surprises in terms of the Golden Globes. There's a couple surprises in TV, like Brooklyn Nine-Nine winning, but that's not unexpected considering it's a new show and the Golden Globes likes to pick the new star power for each year. You know, they're not going to pick Glee every year or Modern Family every year. So they like to switch that up. But then there's also the Razzies. And, you know, I don't even want to talk about the list of the Razzie winners because I hate the Razzies. And here's why. It's not that I hate awards that are given out for bad movies. What I hate about the Razzies is how just freaking lazy they are. If you go to the Razzies website, they don't even have a list of their nominees. You have to click through each page to get them, which is just link baiting. That's just trying to pump up your numbers. Just give it. They don't even put in the press release that they'll say, "Oh, Grown Ups 2 won, got nominated for the most," but it's not really. It doesn't break them out by category very easily. But they're just some of the laziest things. Like one of the things that for the on-screen combo, one of the people they chose like the entire cast of Grown Ups. That's like my 5-year-old giving out awards. My 5-year-old going, "I love everything. What's your favorite toy?" "Everyone, all my toys." And then on the on-screen combo, they chose Tyler Perry and Larry the Cable Guy for A Midnight Christmas, or Tyler Perry and his ratty old wig and dress. And I'm like, that's not even, now you're just making stuff up. And that's part of the reason why I hate the Razzies. You know, people like, oh, well, it's, it, 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 It's there to have fun and to not take itself seriously. The thing is, it does take itself seriously. They take themselves so seriously, but they present themselves so poorly. And I don't think they're doing it in an ironic tip your hat sort of way. They're just presenting themselves terribly to the world. I don't even want to talk about the Razzies anymore. Let's talk real quickly about the Oscar nominations, though. Those came out this week, and kind of like the Golden Globes, not a whole lot of surprises. There were a couple. There's always going to be that list of, well, so-and-so was robbed, and the internet blows up with people saying this person was snubbed. I mean, there's obvious ones like Tom Hanks wasn't nominated for acting, but you can't say that the other people nominated for Best Actor didn't deserve to be on there. You know, Christian Bale, Bruce Stern, DiCaprio, Ejiofor, and McConaughey. If you're going to lose to any of them, they all gave good performances. And yeah, you know, Mr. Kennedy wasn't nominated for Best Song. But you know what? There's not any sort of leading thing. I think you're going to see this spread around, very similar to what happened with the Golden Globes. We'll talk a little bit about more of the Oscars in a couple weeks when we get closer to the ceremony. And that music means it's time for our trailer park. All right, the first one I want to talk about is the new Muppets Most Wanted trailer. It's not actually a full trailer that you see in the movie theater. It was played on the Golden Globes, and it was brilliant because it captures the spirit of the internet, which I was watching while the Golden Globes was going on.
Critics across the internet are outraged that Muppets Most Wanted was not nominated for over 247 awards.
No. That's terrible.
Hot Fudge 1218 says Muppets should have been nominated Best Picture for reals. Then Baby Bean 1128 proclaimed, "It can't be. It's not out yet. You're ignorant." So then Hot Fudge 1218 said, "Don't call me ignorant. You don't even know."
Well, he seems like a nice guy.
Yeah. Humble and honest.
Muppets Most Wanted, finally eligible for nominations March 21st.
I love this because this is the way people are. There's a ridiculous amount of ignorance on the internet and a ridiculous amount of outrage that is often either inappropriate or misconstrued or unnecessary. And the fact that you have the Muppets not getting a nomination for Muppets Most Wanted, which hasn't come out yet, is kind of a brilliant way to handle it. So, you know, kudos to the folks at Disney for putting together one heck of a trailer for Muppets Most Wanted. I love the fact that Disney is embracing the irreverence that the Muppets always had back in the 70s and 80s, that they kind of lost a bit when they sort of were just doing TV movies and trying various revivals. I think they're bringing back the Muppets full force, and that's a good thing. The next trailer I want to highlight is Veronica Mars. This is, of course, famous for getting a Kickstarter campaign to kickstart the film.
My daughter, the big shot New York lawyer. You're destined for greatness.
Local authorities have ruled the death a homicide and are focusing their investigation on her boyfriend, Logan Eccles.
I need your help, Veronica.
I don't really do that anymore.
9 years of radio silence, and yet I still kind of knew I could count on you.
Veronica Mars.
Look who it is. Most likely to blog in Class Buzzkill.
Now, I've never watched Veronica Mars up until like last weekend. It just recently became available exclusively, the entire series, on Amazon Prime. For a while there, it was on Netflix. Now it's on Amazon Prime, so you can binge watch it now. And I'm watching a bunch of it. I don't know how many of these I can stomach for, you know, like I don't know if I can't watch like an entire season in a day. It's not my kind of show, but there's only three seasons, so I feel like I should at least take a chance to watch, you know, a couple seasons of it and kind of get an idea of what's going on. And watching the trailer, I can get a little bit. The trailer's a bit spoilery if you haven't watched the show, but you know, where have you been? The show's been off the air for, you know, half a dozen years, so I don't know. I guess I'm looking forward a little bit to Veronica Mars just to kind of see if they can break out of that. The mode of TV feel to it. This was made right when TV was starting to become cinematic, but the trailer still has a very CW, you know, even though it wasn't on the CW, it has a very TV show feel to it. Anyways, we have to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Devil's Due and Ride Along. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We're ready to roll into the movie reviews. We've got four of them this week because what else are you going to do in January but release movies during Oscar season that have no chance of winning any sort of Oscar ever in the near future or distant future for that matter. But let's jump right in since we've got so many. The first one is another found footage movie. Dear God, this is enough to make... To make anybody just weep at the number of terrible excuses for horror movies. And found footage is probably the worst excuse ever. Anyways, this movie is Devil's Due. A young married couple are overjoyed to discover they're pregnant until they start to suspect she's carrying the Antichrist.
We're having a baby.
That is so...
Breathe in. Your body is going through a beautiful transformation.
Hey, do you see this guy? He's just staring up at the house.
I found these weird symbols.
In early Christianity, there were groups of dissenters who felt that they could use these symbols for summoning an Antichrist.
You were born from death.
Oh, dear. Dear God. You know, this is a movie that will make you find religion. And here's why. It is so bad. It is so bad, you will pray for the end of the movie. And in general, what I always find funny about Hollywood is Hollywood's a very secular place. You know, there was, you know, ever since the Hays Code was abolished, they tend to be very secular, and there's not a whole lot of religious themes in movies until you bring in the Antichrist, and then the entirety of Hollywood finds Jesus. And that's... Kind of, well, I'll tell you, that's not exactly what happened in this movie, although there are moments where they're suddenly sort of taking a religion seriously, but ultimately, there might be a good movie buried somewhere in The Devil's Due, but ultimately, it's not. And the biggest burden for this is it's found footage. And I know I've been hard on found footage in the past, and I will talk more about found footage later, but this movie has every single cliche you can have with found footage. Starts with the staticky camera, the, you know, those kind of noises, and it just begins with just inane, boring crap. Fly on the wall discussion. You know what? If you've seen people's home movies, they're at least realistic in the sense that these are as boring as watching anybody else's home movies. All the lead up stuff, all the characterization stuff is as just excruciating to watch as the Tommy Lee and Pamela Anderson honeymoon video / sex tape without the sex. They see these people getting married and they go on their honeymoon. But what makes it even worse in sort of that found footage genre is this film works tirelessly to excuse the reason why this guy's filming the entire movie. And I remember I was critical of Chronicle when it did that, and I've been critical of other movies, even stuff like Blair Witch and Cloverfield, which are decent found footage movies. Those films just work too hard to try and explain why they were filming the whole thing. And the story in this one is the guy's like, well, I need to film this just because I want to keep every moment that we have. I want to document every moment I have. And of course, they never go back to watch the footage until way later than they ever should have. And they end up on their honeymoon and the characters just do some of the stupidest things. I mean, stupid for a horror movie, like going to the worst part of town where they're honeymooning and finding themselves in the worst district and it being dragged in a basement saying, oh, no, really, come here. We're not going to rape and murder you. Seriously, we're just going to take you to a party. This film, it's nauseating to watch because, of course, they never hold the camera still. The dialogue is awful because it's not very good actors trying to improv their way through something. It's like a really bad mumblecore movie where they just keep talking and talking and talking and trying to reiterate what they've been saying and narrating what's on screen. And when they finally have anything sort of interesting happening, it's so sort of half done and it's so blatantly obvious and there's no resolution to even things that happen. Like there's a scene where she goes in, the pregnant woman who's pregnant with the Antichrist goes into a supermarket, starts eating raw meat. Of course, some reason they're showing it on security footage. And then it just cuts. There's no resolution to it. Whereas, honestly, if a woman went into a supermarket and started eating ground beef out of the case, they call the cops or an ambulance or the very least send a manager to talk to her to make sure she was okay. This movie is terrible. It's so awful. It's as bad as a found footage movie can be. And we've already had a terrible found footage movie this year. And you know what? The worst part about these movies is when you sit down, they start playing the trailer. And what do you see trailers of? More crappy found footage movies that are coming out. So I can't take it anymore. This movie sucks.
It sucks.
So I can just say, Devil's Dud. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on to Ride Along, which is a new buddy cop film, almost buddy cop film, because one of the characters isn't a cop yet. In this movie, Kevin Hart plays a security guard who goes on a ride along with Ice Cube in order to show he has what it takes to marry his sister.
Why do I have to suck up to the brother just because she wants us to get along?
That little clown is dating my sister, little man smurf.
Maybe he just wants into the fam.
I know exactly what he wants.
Do not screw this up for me.
I love him.
James, I wanted your blessing in asking your sister to marry me.
Show me that you're worthy of her.
How am I supposed to do that?
I'm gonna take you on a ride along.
This is all that I want.
Today is your training day. Have you ever even held a gun before?
Bang, bang.
Oh! This movie could have been awful. And it's not. I'm just gonna just throw that out there. There are some decent things in this movie. There are some funny lines. There are some moments that made me laugh. I tend to like Kevin Hart. He's the new it guy in Hollywood. He had those stand-up specials that did very well in general release. He's been showing up in everything from Think Like a Man to Grudge Match because, like I said, he's the new big thing. They brought back Ice Cube, who is sort of kind of a has-been. But you know what? He plays his standard Ice Cube bad boy attitude, and him and Kevin Hart have decent chemistry. They're not great. I don't think we're getting a new Riggs and Murtaugh in terms of buddy cop films, and it does have a plot that's weirdly similar to The Heat with Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy last year, and that movie was terrible. I hated that movie. I know a lot of people loved it, but I did not like The Heat. This movie, What it hinges upon is the chemistry between Hart and Ice Cube. And they're decent together. I actually liked them. I thought they did a good job. There are some parts that made me laugh. It doesn't overstay its welcome too much. Its biggest problem, though, is there are scenes that just tend to go on too long. The movie itself doesn't really overstay its welcome, but the scenes do. And especially in the third act, there's a scene near the end that just keeps going when it really should have ended. And sort of as a half-baked script. I think relying a little bit too much on Kevin Hart's fast-talking improv dialogue. And what you end up with is you end up with a movie that's slightly bloated in the middle, sort of like a python that has swallowed a pig. And it's just sort of stuck in its digestive tract. This thing could have been baked a little bit more, and it might have been decent. You can do a lot worse with January comedies. Don't get me wrong. This isn't the worst film. It's no Devil's Due. But it's not great. So while I did enjoy it, it's not exactly a movie I think anyone needs to stampede out to see. And ultimately, when you take it all in consideration, does kind of suck.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, that's it for the first two movies. We have to go to a break. When we come back, two more movies, Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit, and The Nut Job. Back to Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's move right on to more movie reviews here. The first one I want to talk about is Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit. Now, this is a reboot of the Jack Ryan series, which we had Alec Baldwin play him in Hunt for Red October. You had Harrison Ford play Jack Ryan in the 90s with movies like Clear and Present Danger and Patriot Games. And then they tried to reboot it again with Ben Affleck playing a younger version in The Sum of All Fears, which I think late 90s, early 2000s. That one wasn't as good. Now they're kind of going back to the beginning, taking Tom Clancy's character and giving him the full origin of how he goes from just an analyst in the CIA into the field and becoming the big action hero of today. So Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit, is coming up. Young CIA analyst Jack Ryan gets caught up in a dangerous international situation when he travels to Moscow to track down terrorist money.
This is quarterback. I have a situation. Somebody tried to kill me.
You know, you sold this as an office job.
Why don't you sit down? Now talk me through your very scary scenario. Keep in mind, I don't have your PhD.
Tokyo, London, the United States. It's gonna be a wipeout. We'll never see it coming.
You're not just an analyst anymore. You're operational now.
When this was first announced, I thought, oh, great, this is going to be a summer movie. It just makes sense. It sounds like a July film. And that's the way I think Patriot Games was. I can't remember when the release of Hunt for Red October was. But these movies, these things scream summer release. But then I heard that it was not just being not released in the summer, it was being released in January, which if anyone knows anything about movies, January is a notorious dumping ground for films. It's either crappy horror films that nobody cares about or movies that just can't make it anywhere else. So it was kind of surprising that they put it there. After seeing it, I'm not surprised it fell in January, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's differentiating itself from a big summer action movie. It's not lickety-split, wall-to-wall action. It's a little bit more cerebral. In times, it can get actually kind of thick with what's going on they're tracing money into accounts and who's doing what and why they're doing that. But overall, for sort of like an international intrigue movie, it's not too bad. In a way, it reminds me of The Bourne Legacy. If you watch the Bourne series, they have the first three Bourne movies with Matt Damon, as Jason Bourne. And the first one was Bourne Legacy was directed by Doug Liman. And then the other two were directed by Paul Greengrass. So you got a very specific feel to it. Then they moved on to The Bourne Legacy, had actually a totally different character, not having Jason Bourne in it at all. So they put that into August, so it wasn't a big June or July release. And it's a slower burn. Bourne Legacy is a slower burn. Jack Ryan Shadow Recruits a slower burn. But it's still a decent film. It doesn't run too long. Kevin Costner's pretty good in it, and which is surprising because he kind of went from being this young hot star to then not knowing where he was in terms of, is he old? Is he young? Is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? You know, is he a dark character? Is he a bright shining character? Now he's gotten old enough that he can take on the more fatherly roles. I mean, he was Superman's father in Man of Steel last year, and now he's basically Jack Ryan's surrogate work father in Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit. Chris Pine does a great job as Jack Ryan. I think he works. He's always kind of been that big movie director. He brings his Captain Kirk to the role. And Keira Knightley's in it, and she does a good job. She's very easy on the eyes, very good to look at. And Kenneth Branagh, who directs it, also stars as the bad guy. And he does a fine job, too. I thought he did a better job than you would expect a director who's acting in his own film. So, you know, this isn't the greatest movie of the year. Maybe it is right now. Who knows? Because there's only been like seven or eight. But Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit is pretty decent. So I'm giving it a kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, let's move on. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We're going to move on to another movie called The Nut Job. And this is an animated film. So let's just play the trailer really quick. And then we'll move on. And I've got a guest reviewer here to talk about it. In The Nut Job, a group of woodland animals plan to rob a nut shop to get the food they need to survive the winter.
Okay, we get a crew, we break in, and do it my way. Let's go over the plan. That's us. There's the nut shop. We rob the nut shop and then stuff ourselves silly all winter.
Oh, shut the front door!
What'd you have for breakfast?
We're talking almonds, pistachios, walnuts, and did I mention the peanut brittle?
Is that a candy or a nut?
Both.
Well, I've got with me here, I figured, why bring in another regular reviewer when I can go straight to the horse's mouth of who this movie is made for. And so I have my son, Ben, with me in the magical studio in the sky to talk about this movie. Hi, Ben.
Hi.
All right. So, Ben, first of all, tell everybody how old you are, just to kind of give a context. You're, what, 26?
No, I'm 10 years old.
All right. And what grade are you in?
Fifth grade.
All right. So you went with me to the Nut Job. What did you think?
I thought it was pretty good. Personally, I liked how, like, everything went and all the storyline and how it's just had a bunch of funny moments in it.
So you thought it was funny?
Yeah.
Was it as good as, like, a Pixar or DreamWorks movie?
About the same. I don't know.
Do you remember the movie Ratatouille?
Yeah.
There's a rat in this one. And I just saw recently, just not too long before we started the show, I saw that Brad Bird, who directed Ratatouille, was questioning whether or not Remy was in this movie because there's a rat in this movie, right?
I don't, right.
Yeah. Well, what's funny about it is the rat, he kind of looks like, do you know those before and after pictures of somebody who did drugs? You know, where like maybe like Remy from Ratatouille was what he was before he started to take meth. And then this rat after the meth addict and the nut job is maybe Remy after he fell on hard times. Do you think that that's true?
Yes.
You do. You do. You think that's a good theory?
Yes, I do.
All right. I actually have to say I kind of like the movie too. I was surprised. I thought the trailers looked terrible. Did you see the trailer?
No, but I.
Then how'd you know you wanted to see the movie?
Well, because it's just a bunch of kids at my school were talking about how good the movie looked.
So they saw the trailer?
Yes, they saw the trailer.
I'm not believing these kids. What, fifth grade you said?
Yes.
It's not that I would know, right? I don't take you to school ever.
Exactly.
All right, so you're saying that the kids at school, based on the trailer, doesn't have anything to do with the fact that this movie has some of the most unintentionally hilarious lines in it ever?
It's funny.
Just remember, we're on the radio.
Yeah, okay.
With a movie name like this, let's just say there's a lot of lines that can be misconstrued if you just take them completely out of context. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you tend to laugh at those.
Yes, exactly.
All right. I the thing is, not everything needs to be Pixar or DreamWorks, and it's January, so a movie like this is perfectly fine. It's not terribly unique. It's not terribly deep thinking. It's not going to break the boundaries of animation. It has some funny moments. It has some trite moments. It has some trite characters. Things don't always completely fit together, but, you know, doggone it. I thought it was a cute movie. So, you know, beyond my better judgment, like, you know what? I took you to see Free Birds, right?
Yes.
And I hated that movie.
Yes, you did.
Did you hate that movie?
No, I loved it.
You loved it?
No, I didn't love it. I don't want to marry it, but I just liked it.
Okay. You know what? We've got that out of the way. You don't want to marry Freebird. Do you want to marry the nut job?
No.
Okay. Good to know. You're a little young for that. I don't think you need to marry anybody or any movie for that matter.
Exactly.
All right. So, final fat guy grade. What do you give the nut job?
4 stars out of 5.
No. It's rocks or sucks. Kind of rocks, kind of sucks. Which one is it?
Kind of rocks.
Just kind of rocks?
Yeah.
What about Freebirds? Did Freebirds get a totally rocks because you loved it?
No, it gets a kind of rocks the same.
Wait, hold on a second. How can something get a kind of rocks and you loved it, but not wanting to marry? Do you have to want to marry it before it gets a totally rocks?
Exactly.
Okay. I'm going to give the official fat guy grade for Kevin, and my official grade is... It kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
It's also, it was a co-production of South Korea. So on that, we're going to leave you with this song as we go to a break.
Oppan Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Oppan Gangnam Style.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We are wrapping up the show here, and we've got our next segment, which we want to talk about box office. Doesn't we like to look at the box office, who won the weekend, who who's doing well, who wasn't doing well. And the first thing is, I have an announcement to make. I'm an idiot, because I said that Hercules, The Legend of Hercules, whatever the heck it's called, was going to make $18 million this opening weekend and win the weekend. I don't know what was going on. Maybe I was, I don't know. I blame, I got to find somebody. Who can I blame? I'll figure out a scapegoat by the end of the show of who I can blame for why I thought Hercules was actually going to win the weekend. It did not. What won the weekend was Lone Survivor with $38 million, which is a huge number, especially for a January release. Now, I mean, the thing is, Mark Wahlberg films tend to do really well in January. He did movies like Contraband, which was a big, huge, probably a bigger hit than it ever would have been if it wasn't in January. Part of the reason I thought it wasn't going to do as well, because early, like the opening, the limited release market was not doing very well. But then again, that's kind of the art house crowd, and Lone Survivor is not an art house movie. Lone Survivor is a mainstream, middle America, heartland kind of movie, and the heartland responded, and it really, really connected with an audience. And especially if you have, if you served in the military, or you have friends or relatives who served in the military, Lone Survivor really connected with that audience. So, you know, gosh, $38 million, that's amazing. I think this will probably be a bigger hit than Battleship was for Peter Berg. So good for the folks in Lone Survivor. Frozen came in second, and then The Legend of Hercules came in with half of what I expected at $8.9 million. When I first saw those Friday returns, I was like, oh dear, I am so off on this. But you know what? The Legend of Hercules wasn't necessarily a good movie, so it's not like it's a disaster. It didn't do well. Then there's The Wolf of Wall Street, American Hustle, and The Hobbit. Both The Wolf of Wall Street and American Hustle bumped up a bit. August, Osage County, which I never covered, and I might cover that next week and give it a quick review. It got Meryl Streep an Oscar nomination, same for Julia Roberts. It came in with $7.2 million, which isn't terrible. That's, I mean, these are big numbers for going down to like the 10th, 12th place. You're still looking at $5 or more million. Then Saving Mr. Banks. Paranormal Activity took a huge hit. It was a 66% drop down to $6.2 million. That thing's going to be dropping off so fast. It's not even going to be here by February. And then Her, which also came in, which opened, made $5.3 million, which isn't bad. That only put it at 11th place because there's a lot of strong movies happening in between that. And then finally, one little thing to note, 12th place, The Hunger Games, Catching Fire, made $4.4 million. It finally, this last weekend, beat Iron Man 3 as the highest grossing movie of 2013. Box office prediction for next week, I'm thinking $32 million for Jack Ryan. That is what's going to win the weekend. Boom, the prophet has spoken. Before we move on to the DVD roundup, I wanted to hit a couple news stories that I missed in the first segment. And these are ones that just kind of struck me as a little odd. Now, the first one I talked about, I was going to talk about naked women, and this is how it fits in. Apparently, Lena Dunham, who show runs and directs and stars and writes in Girls, which is the TV show on HBO, which I don't watch, and has nothing to do with Lena. I mean, I don't find her interesting. It has nothing to do with her looks and her copious amounts of nudity on the show. I watched the first episode of it, and I was bored to tears. I was like, I just don't find the characters interesting. Sure, they're real. They're very realistic. That's wonderful. You made very realistic, boring characters. So I don't watch it. I'm not a big Lena Dunham fan, but she has posed for Vogue, and the website Jezebel.com has come out and offered a $10,000 bounty for the untouched photos of Lena Dunham from her photo shoot with Andy Leibovitz. Now, the reason this is significant is because it's Vogue. Vogue retouches all of their models, no matter who they are. If you're going to be on the cover of Vogue, you're going to get yourself nipped and tucked with Photoshop. Here's the thing, though. Lena Dunham has been an outspoken advocate for the reality of the human body. And I'm a huge fan of the reality of the female form. Perfection is fun to look at now and then, but I like looking at women that don't necessarily fit the normal body type, that don't fit the cover model of Vogue. If Lena Dunham is so adamant that she be taken seriously as, this is who I am, you need to respect me for looking the way I do, going on the cover of Vogue and getting yourself retouched is kind of hypocritical. And I have to agree with that. I have to say, you know what? It would have been a bigger statement if Lena Dunham would have said, yes, I'll do the cover of Vogue, but you can't retouch me. And put that in her contract. because the internet lost its mind over this. People were so upset at Jezebel for doing this that they lost their mind and have been complaining about it. But you know what? Lena Dunham's basically selling out her form for this so she can be on Vogue, and they go, well, then maybe people will watch Girls and get the look at what a real woman looks like. It doesn't matter. She's selling it out. If she really wanted to make a stink, she should have made a stink and done a public stink and said, look, I'll do it as long as you don't photo retouch me, or you don't retouch me with Photoshop. That's what she should have done. Because as she is now, she is part of the problem. And she is doing more for body shaming by being on the cover of Vogue and letting them change her. If they did. Now, maybe they didn't. But that's what Jezebel's saying. Get us the untouched photos. We'll be the judge of that. The next news is just sort of a lark. We've got Harvey Weinstein out there because you've got some August Osage County and Filomena Awards coming around, but they really don't have a front runner like the King's Speech or the Artist this year. So the Weinsteins are making some noise, and Harvey Weinstein is making a film that he says the NRA will, quote, wish they weren't alive when they see it. And here's the quote he says, I'm going to make a movie with Meryl Streep, and we're going to take this, the gun issue, head on, and they're going to wish they weren't alive after I'm done with them. Here's the thing, just because Meryl Streep makes a movie doesn't mean anybody cares. Just because Harvey Weinstein makes a movie doesn't mean it's going to do well. And I don't care where you stand on the gun issue, whether you're pro-Second Amendment or anti-Second Amendment, the idea that just you're making a movie with Meryl Streep is going to enact some sort of social change? You mean like making a movie like Bully Stop Bullying? Or like how Meryl Streep, when she was in a role for Lions for Lamb, how that stopped the war in Iraq? Or how her role in Rendition stopped torture from happening? This is hogwash. This is Weinstein desperately trying to get notice for himself and for Meryl Streep, because that's all he's got this award season. Next up, we got a little bit of listener feedback. This comes from Chad from Knoxville. That's the only name he gave. I'm going to assume he's Chad Vader, you know, from the internet videos of Darth Vader's brother. So Chad Vader says, what's your beef with found footage? Chill out, man. Okay, Chad Vader, if that is your real name. Here's the thing. Found footage is not original. Found footage is not creative. They are mostly derivative of each other. Sure, some movies like when the Blair Witch Project came out, I thought that was fascinating. I thought that was neat. Cloverfield, one of the first big found footage movies that came out nationally by a studio, that was kind of cool. And Paranormal Activity was an interesting experiment. But you know what? The experiment's over. These found footage things are just not very good. They're forced. It's an excuse to have crappy cinematography. And they're not realistic, because the realism problems of people not putting the camera down, running around with a camera, keeping the battery going, it to me gets in the way. When you have a perfectly good movie to tell, it gets in the way. And now some movies, like I said, the original Paranormal Activity was interesting. But by the time you're in the fifth one, abandon it. Wreck, which was a Spanish movie, which was remade into Quarantine, was a found footage movie, and that was a great found footage movie. Wreck 2 was an interesting movie. When they finally did Wreck 3, the third movie abandons found footage and really kind of makes an interesting movie out of it. So it's fine to do one now and then, but it's a fad and it's terrible and it needs to end. All right, that music means it's time for the world famous DVD Roundup. We got to go through these quickly. We're running out of time. A couple ones I really want to highlight. Your Next is a horror film that deconstructs horror films. It's a slasher home invasion movie that really kind of is irreverent and changes things up a little bit. There's also the remake of Carrie, Kimberly Pierce kind of redoing Brian De Palma's classic based on Stephen King's novel. Actually a really good movie. It kind of bombed in October, but check it out if you want to see a good solid horror film. There's also Sunrise, which is a movie from 1927. It's one of the first movies to really use a full sound mix with music and sound effects. Very interesting movie to watch. I mean, yeah, it's like from 1927, but get yourself a little bit of culture. It's been remastered and put on Blu-ray. Riddick, that's not bad. That's on DVD and Blu-ray. A Chorus Line is also on Blu-ray. And this is, of course, the Richard Attenborough film version of the classic Broadway musical from the 80s. a couple of award films that are out there, The Spectacular Now, which I didn't particularly like, The Butler, which I thought was a little bit of race baiting, but has an okay thing going on. Enough Said, which is Julia Louis-Dreyfus in a movie about her sort of finding love after divorce. Also one of James Gandolfini's final roles. And then Short Term 12 stars Brie Larson. Pretty decent to check out. If you like, especially sort of that grassroots independent stuff. Singer of the Week is I'm in Love with a Church Girl because it's got Ja Rule and the girl from the Cheetah Girls, so it can't be that good. Next week, we're going to be talking about I, Frankenstein, Gimme Shelter, and Gloria. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.